This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
It's 200. Holy shit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 200. What Did You Watch This Week? It was Mike.
Seemed a little boisterous for, you know, having just stumbled over the starting pistol, you know.
I can do it.
But it is episode 200, and as we promised last week, we're not doing shit.
Yeah, no, nothing special. No. It's just, no. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's a milestone.
Yep. Next week will be 201.
If you don't like that, feel free to message us.
No one does.
Ever.
Anyhow.
Carolyn used to.
Yep.
She doesn't anymore.
I don't think she does the Facebook anymore. Maybe so. I don't know.
No.
I don't keep track of these things.
So did you watch some stuff this week?
I did. Yeah, I did. I watched some stuff. You?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Cool.
Like I kind of told you, it's Monday the 18th, 17th.
Yes, the 17th.
Monday the 17th, and that's the day we're recording. We did not watch Doctor Who last night. We'll talk about that this week.
But we also have last week's to talk about.
Yes, we have last week's to talk about. But the reason why I messaged you saying I do not believe I'm going to be watching Doctor Who this week because the wife and I started watching Outlander. And we got sucked in. It's a holiday here, and my wife and I are both off. And I don't know, you're off as well, but I mean, she works at a bank, and they're closed today. But
right.
Yeah, I got sucked in pretty hard. Have you watched that at all?
I have not.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, it...
No, I've heard good things, but I've never actually sat down and watched it.
It's pretty addicting. Like, it's a good story. We've watched 7 episodes of the first season.
Really?
Yeah.
How many episodes are there?
I believe the first season has 10. Netflix has 3 seasons on there. I think they've
been, it's a Showtime series.
Stars.
Stars.
Yeah. I think they've aired 4 seasons. I think the fourth season started Saturday or something like that, I believe. But yeah.
What's the elevator pitch? Some woman gets stuck back in time.
It's 1945, and she's British, and the war is just over, and her husband, they were both in the military. She was a nurse, her husband was an officer, and they're out, and he's researching his family tree. So the first episode, and he's got Scottish heritage, so the first episode is they go to Scotland, and we learn some history. And then she comes across the stones, like stone circle, not Stonehenge, but like these stone circle. And they witness some sort of ceremony that happens at the stone circle some early in the morning. And then it's like she goes back to pick this flower because she's kind of into botany as well, because she's into kind of herbal medicines at the same time. And anyhow, I mean, she was a nurse like in the war, so she was used to seeing like battlefield injuries and stuff like that. Which comes into play later.
Okay.
But so while she's there at the stone circle, she hears drumming and she's kind of drawn to the rock and she puts both her hands on the center stone and then wakes up in 1743 Scotland, like right where she is.
I knew there was some kind of supernatural twist there.
But it's weird because other than her being back in time and she narrates the story like it's past tense.
Okay.
Other than her being back in time, there's really no other supernaturalness to it. There's all the standard, like, they believe in demons, they believe in potions, they believe in certain little things, like, and they're fighting with the British, obviously, but So there's no other real supernatural elements. There's no like in the episodes we've seen, whenever she uses medicine to help people, it's just medicine. We've seen no other supernatural anything whatsoever. Hmm. And like they talk about believing like this boy who's been poisoned, but he's actually this boy who they believe has been possessed, but he's actually poisoned because they go to these ruined lands. And anyways, a lot happens to these other kids as well, but he's actually been poisoned by a plan he ate, thinking it was something different. She discovers this, but the minister is trying to do an exorcism on it, but there's no, but you don't see anything. There's no other supernaturalness other than that moment where she puts her hands on the stone and gets transported back in time so far.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's pretty. I mean, it's a really good story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a twist on basically a historical period drama of, you know, 1740s Scotland and the tension between Scotland and England.
Set to Little House on the Prairie.
Not really.
No.
No, she's.
Dr. Quinn, medicine woman.
No, because it's not wholesome. It's TVMA. There's a lot of violence, and like basically the first guy she meets when she goes back in time tries to rape her because he can. And then she kind of gets taken in by the Scots and they don't trust her because they think she's an English spy. She might be an English spy.
Fair enough.
But she's proved herself worthy with her healing abilities. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely not Dr. Quinnish Medicine Woman or Little House on the Prairie-ish. It's pretty rough and tumble.
Interesting.
It's pretty rough and tumble. Everyone's had a hard life. It's almost like you're getting kind of like, I don't want to say the peasant point of view, because it's not like there's a king, but I mean, it's not like Game of Thrones where that type of battling war all the time. It's more of like there's some hostile tensions that are rising, but there's some historical context to this for these actual Jacob something battles that happen between the two. So. But yeah, no, it was it's really good. I'm surprised.
Oh.
Because the previous trailers I'd seen for it really didn't have me interested in it. And then I think it was actually the season 3 trailer. I was like, ooh, I think I want to check this out. And then my wife actually watched the first couple episodes on her own. And I came downstairs this morning and she was watching one of the episodes. And kind of got sucked into it, and then I went back and watched the first one, and then we kind of got caught up to where she was, and then we watched them together for a while.
Well, it's nice that you have that together.
Nice day spent in the crappy weather.
Yeah. Wait, today? Today wasn't crappy.
Well,
it was sunny and it was nice, and things were melting.
Yeah, well, I went outside at one point and scraped some chunks off the driveway.
Yeah.
Friggin', I got patches of ice from 1 inch to 3 inches, depending on where it was. I mean, I probably got half the driveway done. And then just between yesterday and today. Exhausted.
Mm.
We talked about that.
Yes. Yes, we did.
So what'd you watch?
Oh, stuff and things. Might as well go through the ones. Did you watch Flash?
I did not.
Okay.
How was it?
It was okay.
I know it was a Valentine's Day episode.
Yep. Amunet Black and Goldface are exes.
Oh, okay.
And they wanted to get their hands on this orchid that only blooms like once every 24 years or something like that.
When
it blooms, the pollen from it can give you telepathic abilities.
Okay.
They ended up getting those so that Iris, like, dosed them so that they could read each other's thoughts and realize how much they still loved each other.
Did she have doubts?
Oh, yeah. They hated each other. And we're still dealing with whether or not this is the real Iris or a mirror Iris.
Oh, yeah, because she got sucked into the mirror world.
Yeah, and everything seemed fine, and, you know, Barry was a little suspicious at first because she made pancakes and they didn't suck. And he's like, who are you? And she's like, remember, I made a New Year's resolution that I was going to learn to make pancakes? Well, I made pancakes. But then at the end of the episode, we see that they're hugging in front of a mirror, and inside the mirror is another version of Iris pounding on it, saying, "Barry, don't trust her." So
there we go.
What about Legends?
I watched Legends, yeah. I made it a point to watch Legends.
Legends is great.
I thought Legends was good.
They tackled the 80s slasher theme.
Yeah, I enjoyed that, going back to the prom.
Yep. Because they had a, turns out Ava's a big murder buff.
She has a podcast, apparently, that no one else listens to.
Called Stabcast.
Yeah, which is actually a really good name.
Yeah. Profiles. She does true crime. Like, it's a true crime podcast based on serial killers. And this kid apparently went nuts and killed a bunch of people at his high school.
The prom night killer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because they done wronged him. So he killed them all, except for this one girl, Tiffany. She was the final girl. She got away. But now at their 15-year reunion, she got stabbed.
Well, the night of his, he got executed the night of the reunion.
Right.
And he's one of he's one of the souls. He's executed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the coroner is driving away, something happens and he gets attacked and the body's missing.
Yep.
And so we cut to now and it's like, oh, he's back. He's one of the souls that Astra,
mm-hmm.
you know, freed from hell.
Yep.
You know, the prom night killer is.
Yep.
And so now we have two groups. One group is in 1984.
Trying to help the kid.
And one group is in 2000.
Right.
Or at the reunion. Yeah. And trying to stop the killer there. And Mick, he runs into an old flame.
Mm-hmm. Which was kind of cool. Gave him a little more depth.
Yep.
And we found out that she basically, he stood her up. Because he had been sent to juvie, but he broke out to go to prom with her, but then he stood her up.
Yeah. And so they try to do the method that – who recommended it? Ray? Yeah, it was Ray. He was like, maybe we can go back to 1984 before he kills everyone and reform him. And so Nora becomes his fairy godmother.
Yeah, because she apparently is multiple fairy god – she's fairy godmother to multiple people.
I think when she's attached to someone, she's stuck with them until they're done.
Mm-hmm.
And she's free from them, and then she gets drawn to somebody else because she said, like, I'm drawn to whoever, like, I can hear all the kids praying for things or begging for things or whatever, wishing for things, and I'm drawn to the one that's wishing the most or the hardest or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets drawn. Is it Freddie?
Yes. Freddie Myers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So. Freddie Krueger, Mike Myers. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he just wants to have a nice suit. And it's funny because you keep thinking he's going to wish for evil things. And he gets the nice suit. And it's a Carrie scenario. You know, the popular girl doesn't have a date at the last minute, asks him to go. He's going to go with her. Oh, wait, is it a setup? They're going to dump a bunch of trash on his head when they're dancing in the middle of the floor. However, that does not succeed because she guides him away. And then, of course, the douchebag kid comes over and he reveals, like, you don't think she actually liked you, did you? Huh? And then embarrasses him and throws, like, punch on him. And kid runs away angry. And so now, like,
his suit's ruined.
Yeah, suit's ruined. Oh, no, now he's going to go kill everyone. So they go hunt him down. And essentially, he's angry. But, if you could have one thing to show them who you really are, what would it be? That's what Nora asks him. And all of a sudden, he wants to do some dance number.
Yeah.
And he gets everyone on his side to do this dance number.
Because he's watched a lot of music videos and he's learned how to dance.
Yeah.
So.
Like Napoleon Dynamite style.
Yeah.
So he does this big dance number. But at the same time, people are still being killed. And he gets everyone on his side and the bully gets put into his place and he's about to leave with the girls. when all of a sudden, the killer, the prom night killer shows up. Because the prom night killer wore a funky mask and killed everyone. And long and the short of it, it's his mom.
So there we hit on the Friday the 13th trope.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't him, it was mommy.
Because then we flash back, you know, and at the, you know, freaking Misery Chick would be screaming shenanigans. But we flash back in the night that Freddie died from being executed. She also died from a heart attack.
Right.
But we find out that, you know, she actually killed everyone all along initially, and that she let her son take the fall because I guess she's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, she didn't seem to really regret it. She wanted them all dead because they're going to take him away from me, and so I needed to keep him close to me.
So?
Yeah. It was basically they tried to hit on all the different tropes that they possibly could.
They did pretty good.
Yep.
Excuse me.
And then the B story, well, other than Rory, which this was another interesting thing where, like, Rory got killed.
Yeah.
Like, she turned the fire back on him.
Oh, yeah, because not only when she came back to life was she murdering people, she now had, like, telekinesis powers, yeah. Oh, and they referenced Carrie when they were going to dump all the trash on his head.
Yep.
They even said Carrie in the show.
Yep. But Mick died. But then when they stopped his mom from killing people and the whole thing from happening
she
back
got arrested.
Before,
yeah.
Then he came back. Nobody really talked about it. Nobody, you know, said, I mean, they said at one point, where's Mick? And he was off making out with that girl. But then we had the B story, which was Constantine went to what I thought was the House of Mystery. I don't know if it really is or not.
I thought it was as well.
Because he was like, this place belongs to me. Nobody's been here since I left. But Charlie was there because she had shapeshifted into him.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe even more that it's the House of Mystery. But they didn't really, like, touch upon that.
She had a banger of a party.
Yep. So.
But anyway, so they have a heart-to-heart. And basically, he's going to go open this door to try to get the answer he needs. And there's someone behind there that... I guess I don't recall that one.
No.
Yeah. But there's someone behind that door, and he's got to break the seal and go in.
Yep.
So, and he does.
And then we also had Zari being a complete princess.
Yep.
It's who she is now. You know, in this timeline, that's who she is.
She's one of those internet personality, hey guys, how's this going? Oh, yeah, influencers, yep.
Yeah. But she has a little flash where she remembers her other life as a hacker because she's able to hack Gideon's system. And
she has flashes of being on the ship and knowing, yeah.
But she's not really, like, worried about it. She's not really acknowledging it, you know.
No.
She's just like, oh, I'm that good.
Yes, in true fashion, she aerially thought she just had skills.
Yeah.
That's true. I didn't think of that.
And Bayrod... she finds out that he has the wind totem and that he can use it. So she's kind of like, oh, so I guess this is why you know, don't tell anybody what you're doing.
Well,
this is why.
Yeah, when the mom tries to kill everyone, she gets in this limo because she's like, computer, have a car pick me up. Because she still doesn't understand that it's not 2044.
Right.
And she's sitting in this limo and then...
Vintage.
Yeah, and Freddie and all the other kids get in there to go, and then she's just sitting there, and then Mom tries to attack them, and she helps fight off Mom, and then her brother saves the day, and she's like, oh, okay. And she's like, well, maybe I'll stay on board with you for a while and not go back to see Mom and Dad. So that's how they're going to keep her on the ship.
Yeah. I'm wondering if those two can exist.
Yeah.
You know, if she gets her memories back, is it going to erase his timeline?
Yeah. But at the same time, Ava's super excited because in her mind, her and Sarah get to be final girls battling the slasher.
And then they all go to the photo booth.
Yes. And that's when they're in the photo booth taking all kinds of photos and Zari's with them there. Then they're like, hey, where's Mick? And it's like the record scratch and Mick's making out with that girl over in the corner.
Yep.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, I very much enjoy Legends.
I look forward to the show.
How
was Supergirl and Batwoman? Did you watch them?
They weren't on.
Okay.
They just came back last night, which
okay.
I didn't watch for.
Man, I cannot wait for next Sunday and The Rookie to finally come back.
Yeah.
It has been too long.
It really has.
Yeah.
That one and I was thinking about it today, The Orville.
I thought that was December.
No. No, it's still away. I want to say it's like April. It's like way up there. But yeah, I was actually watching Picard, and the third episode was good. The fourth episode was fucking phenomenal.
Oh, really?
Jesus, the fourth episode, I was just like, this is amazing. And then I started thinking of the Orville.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. It just says still late 2020. Nothing else. Mm-hmm. So Picard's excellent.
Especially the fourth episode. It was just so damn good.
Well, you know, that way I watched Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Mm-hmm.
I can probably watch Picard the same way.
Oh, nice. I just bought Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Oh, you did? Did you watch it?
No, I just bought it tonight. I had to.
You had to?
Yeah. Well, Amazon offers this thing, like, you get the two-day Prime shipping, but then they have a new option that says, you know, take your time, send it whenever. And if you do that, they give you a $1 digital credit. So I had, like, $29 in digital credits.
Oh, because you just tell them to take the time, because they save money that way.
Yeah. It was mostly around Christmas. Every time I'd order something, I'd be like, take your time. But they have a time limit. So March 1st, like, $10 were going to go away. It was $10 for Jay and Silent Bob. I was like, fuck it.
Seriously? That's it?
Yeah.
Digital?
High def.
Okay, so you didn't buy a hard copy.
No, it's
digital.
All digital. Okay. Those credits are only digital stuff. I thought you could do digital games, but you can't. So it's ebooks, music, and I'm not going to buy music.
No.
So yeah, I'll probably watch that this week at some point.
Cool.
Superstore?
Fucking hated this episode.
The cereal bar?
I'm starting to dislike this show with each passing episode this season.
I hear you.
So the new corporate entity that bought them out basically, you know, gives them a cereal bar. So, of course, Jonah's like, yeah, because this is much better than better pay and health benefits and everything, but the ability to eat cereal. And they eat like a month's worth of cereal in that one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then you got like people who are putting it in their backpack to take home. Yeah. I'm free to eat it. It didn't say that I had to eat it in the store.
Right. And, of course, they're all standing around on the floor with customers eating bowls of cereal. Because, you know, that makes sense.
Of course.
They're going to have the new CEO is going to call in for, like, a meeting with the store, essentially, like a Skype meeting with the store. And, of course, the new CEO of the company that bought them is a young, hip, like...
cool chick.
Yeah, essentially, you know, like she made good on a company and now she's bought this company and she does well for herself or whatever. And I couldn't even stand watching it because like Amy was just being Amy to the nth degree is how I'm going to say it.
Even when she tried to like stop them, tried to stop Sandra from going to the other store to get self-driving cars.
Yeah.
She still managed to be Amy.
And it's really why I just don't like it anymore. Mm-hmm. It drives me insane.
Even my favorite character, Garrett, was just annoying because he found out that, you know, I want to say Sandra, but it's not, the woman who sabotaged her.
Yeah. Carol.
Carol, yeah. So he found out that because Carol tried to kill the cat and sabotage the wedding.
Oh, God, yeah.
Cloud Nine or Zephyr.
Yeah, whatever. Zephyr.
They're too afraid of lawsuits, so they just gave her paid mental health leave. So he's like, well, I want that. So he looks it up in the book and basically tries to convince Glenn to send him out on medical leave. And Glenn is Glenn, and so he's like, you know, I'll counsel you. Now I've taken off my boss vest, and I'm your friend, and you can talk to me about anything. And it just doesn't work out.
No.
They changed writers or something.
Yeah. I used to love the show.
Yeah. I used to look forward to it all the time.
Now I don't.
Nope.
Jonah's becoming fucking obnoxious and unbearable. Amy's neuroticism is unbearable.
Yep.
Like you said, even Garrett, this episode was fucking terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. He was not like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not impressed with it.
No. Nope.
Unfortunately. I liked Stumptown, though.
Stumptown was decent.
I'm not a big fan of those cold opens where, you know, we jump right into the action and then we, 24 hours earlier or 3 days earlier or whatever. It's bullshit. But basically, Dex starts off the episode by ruining a wedding, like telling them to stop. And then we flash back and she was hired to look into the groom-to-be by the overprotective... maid of honor, because she's afraid that the bride-to-be, you know, is marrying a bum and she wants to make sure if there's nothing, blah, blah, blah. Turns out he, you know, the long and the short of it is that he had a girl that he really liked, and he blames himself for her getting in a drunk driving accident and dying. He should have, like, they had a fight or something like that. And so he blames himself. And then come to find out, when you really look down deep, the bride-to-be is to blame because she's the one that was drinking and crashed the car and caused his old girlfriend to die. Now she's marrying the guy without telling him that. So Dex is like, you should tell him. He should hear from your own.
Right.
And yeah, she has money, so they made it go away. But yeah, now he's like, I'm not marrying her.
Well, not only that, does she not want to tell him, but she doesn't want anybody to know because then she'd be liable for the manslaughter.
Right.
Which happens when she gets arrested at the end of the episode after confessing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she was doing it to save her own ass at the same time.
Yep. And basically he's like, yeah, I'm not going to marry him.
Yeah. Well, can you blame him?
No. Yeah. No, I can't. Because she tries to do this in passion, you know, but I still love you and I still want to. And he's like, no.
Yeah.
Bitch.
I got to be honest. Well, not be honest. That's not the sermon. Typically, these Stumptown cold openings are hilarious, but really nothing to do with the episode.
Right.
Like The Rookie.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
But you're right. I hate it when they do the big thing and then 24 hours ago.
Yeah.
It's like if you watch a movie and it says like, you know, 3 days earlier and it's like.
It's the same way that at a certain point you reach the tipping point on a trailer where you're seeing stuff that you know is going to appear in the movie. So you're watching the movie waiting for that scene to appear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. Like, oh, we know that the wedding is going to get ruined and we know that somebody's lying and Dex is trying to stop them. All right, I guess I'll sit through this. Why not just tell me? You know, it's like Dateline, running 2 hours to just tell us in the end that it was the boyfriend that did it.
Right.
But then Tookie is making food for the bar because they kind of got their kitchen shut down. And he wants to be partners with Gray. And Gray doesn't want that.
Nope.
Because this is the only thing that he's done good in his life. And, you know, he doesn't want to wrest some control over and.
He's not wrong.
I really liked that he said that he had stuff to do in his office and he was in there playing video games and Tookie came in and he's like, you're playing video games. He goes, yeah, that's one of the privileges of owning your own business. You can do whatever the fuck you want. But by the end, they patched it up and, you know, he swallowed his pride and took Tookie back, which is good. I like Tookie as a character.
I like Tookie as a character as well.
Schooled?
Singled out. Schooled was good. It was good. It was basically, what's the science teacher's name?
Wilma.
Wilma. So basically, Wilma basically tells Lainey there's no way that her and CB can act normal around each other because it's science and you just can't do it. And Lainey's like, I'm going to prove you and science wrong. And Wilma gets all, because you can't defy science. And so they go have this really awkward meeting where they walk in and essentially at the end of it, Lainey asks CB out on a date to go see a movie and go on a date. And what movie are they going to go see? It was some lame movie, like The Mighty Ducks or something like that. It's not something that, but it's kind of, I say lame, but it's like some tame movie like that.
Yeah.
And then they get there and they end up seeing Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. Because the other one was.
That was a different take on romance. And this is what's stupid. They go to a restaurant and it's not, she thinks it's TGI. Oh, this isn't a TGI Fridays anymore. And it's like, well, the sign outside didn't fucking say TGI Fridays, did it?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, some fancy French restaurant where like it's all about romance there. And they put him in a booth that only has one booth on one side. You know, when you go out to dinner with just two people, you don't sit next to each other. You sit across from each other so you can see each other.
Right.
Yeah. When you have three or more in your party, okay, then two people have to sit next to each other in the booth. But, I mean.
Yeah.
So that was kind of dumb.
But they decide that, you know, singled out is the big hot thing. So they're going to have the high school's version of that. But just for the. Faculty and staff.
Right.
You know, not the students, because that would be creepy.
Yeah. And was this supposed to raise money for something? How would it raise money?
I don't know.
Regardless, Barry's back in town because he's ultra competitive. And Wilma was supposed to be the female contestant and Lainey was going to be the Jenny McCarthy, character. But then to prove Wilma and science wrong again, Lainey wanted to be the competitor, so that way she'd show that Barry was once and for all. But of course,
so they basically played match game. You know, what's her favorite food? What's her and they, you know, both Barry and CB got it all the way through. You know, until CB finally gave it up at the end. You know, he's like, "Oh, you got it, you win." He's like, "Yeah, I win, I win." But then Lainey realizes, "Oh, maybe I'm with the wrong guy." And
well, when they're at the French restaurant, CB says, "This doesn't have to be awkward. Look, I think you found out that I used to have this crush on you, but I don't anymore. So
yeah,
it's
I'm
okay.
moving on.
But I don't want to ruin our friendship."
Mm-hmm.
And now Lainey, like you said, is like, "I don't know if I want to be with Barry or not."
Yeah.
Can we just say Coach Mellor was excellent because he didn't want to participate? Because why would he participate? Because he's with Nurse Janice. Nurse Julie, yeah. And so on singled out, the first answer he put was Nurse Julie.
Yeah.
Nurse Julie, that's not even close. Every answer is Nurse Julie because that's the only woman that's for me.
And then he just leaves.
Like, yeah. I'm all done.
Yep.
I like Mellor.
And then we also, the side story there was Glasscut's niece was on the swim team. She didn't want to get in the pool because she had some body issues because she's a bigger girl.
Glasscut assumed it was period issues.
Yeah, yeah. And so he got her all those. And then later on was saying that, you know, the winner was going to get a year's supply of feminine hygiene products
because
he had all those. Had nothing to do with that. She just had some body issues, you know?
Yeah.
It's the 90s, and everybody looks beautiful and perfect. And
in her mind, she didn't. Yeah. Yep.
And, of course, they tried to do the classic, you know, "Well, I think you're beautiful." And she's like, "Great, I don't. It's not about you. It's about me." So I thought that it was cool, though, that at the end he took down all the pictures of the models and the actresses in her locker.
Yes.
And put up the pictures of her and the newspaper clippings and – you know, so it wasn't just like her school pictures. It was, you know, her athleticism. And he was like, "See, you are beautiful in this way." So that was cool.
I thought it was good.
I'm officially done with The Good Doctor.
So. I didn't watch this week's episode at all.
Okay. I canceled the series recording. I know that it's renewed for another season and some people like it. I'm all set.
Yeah, I didn't bother watching this week's episode. I didn't get to New Amsterdam either.
New Amsterdam was pretty good. It was all about palliative care.
Oh, nice.
So end-of-life stuff.
Yep.
They basically started off with somebody got shipped over to New Amsterdam from a palliative care facility.
Yeah.
Because, as they said, they don't want them to die there. They want them to die here. Because, you know, then they have to fill out all that paperwork. But, you know, if they die here, then that's on us. So Max went and took everybody. He said, "I'm here to transfer everyone from this place over to our place." And
that's a Max move right there.
Yep. And they cleaned out a new wing and created a palliative care ward.
And
it was good.
Yeah.
I do enjoy this show quite a bit.
How can Max just transfer everyone over, though? It seems like there'd be some logistics behind that. And that palliative care place probably makes money off those patients.
I don't know.
But they just don't get into those type of...
No. Yeah. They did get into the financial aspect of this, though, by the end. I'll let you watch that because it was pretty good.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about this one.
Okay.
This Is Us. Hell of a Week, Part 3. Kate's Week.
Can I just say, who gives a fuck?
I have some issues here.
All right, go ahead.
So, this week was all about Kate pondering and hissing and moaning. And, you know, she takes the kid and she goes away for the weekend with her mom instead of with Toby because she's like, you know, "Can't you be happy on this?" And he's like, "I want to." And she's like, "Well, then I'm leaving with my mom. We'll go up there. You stay here and you figure out if you want to be a dad."
Well, but Toby first said, "I don't know if I can go because of work.
Mm.
You know, work may not let me go."
Mm.
And so that's when Rebecca called. Right. And that's when Rebecca called and she's like, "Yeah, Toby's got a work thing." "Oh, I'll go with you."
Yeah.
But still, she just gave him the easy out.
Yep.
Don't give someone the easy out if you don't expect them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And if you do give them the easy out, don't give them shit about it later.
When they take it. Yeah.
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 So she basically, she goes off to this retreat with her mom and, you know, has some heart-to-heart moments and some heartfelt moments. We get to see a lot of flashbacks of Kate with her abusive boyfriend.
Yes.
And he was the stereotypical piece of shit boyfriend. Yeah. You know, the one who is drinking a beer on his bed and talking to her on the phone and saying, you know, you were so, like, you were so rude to me today because, like, you showed me up in front of that guy.
Yeah, you knew that this song was a cover song and didn't have the cool fact like I thought I did.
Yeah. You made me look bad in front of that guy.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm sorry. And he's, like, punishing her. But then he's like, oh, no, it's my fault. You know, I'm just – I get so angry sometimes. And I'm sorry. I got to go. Bye. Click.
Yeah.
So he keeps doing stuff like that throughout the episode.
He quits his job at the record store, gets mad when she doesn't want to quit her job there.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, you should quit too. And she's like, no, I need the money. And he's like, so you're not going to quit.
You're not going to support me on this.
Yeah. So then he throws her out of the car and tells her, I don't want to see your fat face around here. And so she goes to a payphone because, again, you know, this is the 90s probably. She goes to a payphone, calls her mom, and then he shows up with a blanket. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Can you just get in the car? And she's like, okay. But
that's a phone call that has Rebecca worried and alarmed, and that's why they're heading up now to the
– Right.
To, it wasn't like she called in a panic. She called, and mom just got a bad feeling.
Yes. Yeah, they were going up to the cabin, and Rebecca didn't want them to go up there. She's like, we haven't opened it up yet. I don't like the idea of the two of you being up there alone.
She doesn't like Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, doesn't trust him. And because he was a complete dick when he showed up to breakfast, you know, snapping at the waitress and basically blew her mom off. You know, she didn't even matter. So, yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be the next episode before we finally get to see, or maybe even later, I don't know, before we finally get to see what he did in the cabin with her.
Right, because this episode ended with them going to the cabin.
Right.
And it also ended in the...
But it's kind of understandable because she, you know, Kate never had anybody like her growing up, outside of her dad and mom. Even her brothers were kind of...
Yeah.
Dicks to her most of the time. So she's never had that. She finally has somebody who shows her affection, who wants to be with her. So of course she would try to make it work. Of course she would like forgive him and, you know, this is just what it is. She doesn't know what a real relationship is other than seeing her mom and dad, which are just perfect.
Well, that and the other underlying story we have this whole episode is because like the previous two episodes, it's all about Jack trying to get the kids to go to bed and Rebecca's sick. And in this one, he's laying in bed with Kate as a child, of course, and he is trying to get her to go to sleep. So they're making up a story together, and it's about a princess and the prince that rescues her and da-da-da-da-da. And, of course, Kate's the princess and her dad's the prince.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind the greatest guy in the world, which at that time, being a little kid, would be it. She probably still thinks that way now as an adult.
Oh, yeah.
And the big prize that she wanted at the end was her mother to love her.
Mm-hmm.
So even as a little kid, she didn't feel like her mom loved her.
Right.
Which.
So then we've got the future Kate. Well, not future, but present day Kate.
Who's
out there with her mom and her mom's being really supportive. And she actually says at one point, oh, my God, am I turning into one of those women whose best friend is her mom?
Yeah.
And she means it like sincerely.
A little jokingly.
Yeah.
Rebecca shares with her memory issues.
Yep.
So now two of the kids know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But here's. Here's another place where I have issues. One, like I said, you know, and what you put out there was you don't give someone the easy out and then give them shit about it.
Right.
You know, you don't say, oh, you don't have to be here and then be like, I wanted you to be there. No, you don't get to do that.
Right.
If you want them to be there, tell them, I want you to be here no matter what, or there's going to be a problem.
Right.
Don't say, oh, no, you're fine. And then give them shit about it later or punish them later. That's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Toby's no prince either. You know, Toby is... ruminating and he's, you know, withdrawing and not talking to her and keeping everything inside. I don't know. Just fucking open your mouth and be honest, you know, speak up.
Mm-hmm.
But she was so pissed off episodes back when he was venting to his group, you know, he was venting to his lifting group and that one girl jumped in there, you know, and she's like, why would you talk to other people about me?
Right.
Why would you do that?
That's what friends do.
Yeah. And then she's doing the exact same thing to the neighbor.
Right.
You know, she's actually there texting him while she's away with her mom. And then mom's like, you know, how's Toby? Oh, he's fine. Yeah, I wasn't talking to him.
Yeah.
That was Gregory, the neighbor.
Yeah, she pretended to talk to Toby, that she was talking to her at first.
Yeah. And she's doing the exact same thing she gave him shit for and said, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, but, see, here's the thing. Gregory is an older guy who'd had a stroke and has barely any mobility whatsoever. And Toby was talking to a young, skinny, attractive girl.
He was talking in a group chat, and one of them was...
Right.
Well, we assume she was skinny and attractive. We've never seen her.
That's true. We haven't. But we're assuming that. And that's what Kate was assuming. It's a small, attractive girl because she's in CrossFit, yep. And they're all, you know... So it's Kate's insecurities coming out, mm-hmm. which is why you're right. She's doing the same thing Toby was. It's just that in Kate's insecurities, Toby's talking to a young girl. She must not like me, you know, and he must be cheating on me.
Yep.
And Kate's talking to Gregory, yep. who I really like as a character, and was glad to see him back finally.
Yeah, I like the actor anyway.
Yeah, me too.
He was awesome in Gallivant. But yeah, so. Kate's stories continue to frustrate me more than anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, watching her and dad tell that story where she was the princess. I mean, it's hard not to draw some metaphors for life now where she is still the princess. You know, she cries and pitches a fit, and Toby bends over backwards, and mom bends over backwards, and her brothers bend. Everyone bends over backwards for her every time she raises a little red flag. Oh, I don't like this. All right, you know. Toby switched gyms so that he yep. wouldn't talk to that woman anymore, so he wouldn't be around her.
Yep.
And granted, he should have said, she tried to kiss me, I switched gyms. Absolutely. Don't be a dick. Tell her. But he at least did the right thing by moving gyms. I don't know. So, yeah, I think next week will be them all up in the cabin, and we'll probably get to see the continuation of Kate's Mark story.
Well, because the ending of this episode, because we've already seen it before, Randall and Kevin are going to go to the cabin together. Kate, you want to join us? Yeah, I'll be right up. And then she goes to talk to Toby and just like, hey, I'm going to go to the cabin this weekend. Didn't she just spend the weekend away with her mom, or was that a midweek retreat?
No, I think it was a weekend.
Well, now it's the weekend again, mm-hmm. the day that she – and it feels like it's the day she got back. Now she's leaving again.
And Toby's like, you go up there with them, I'll keep the kid. And she's like, I don't think that's a good idea. And he's like, let me spend time with my son.
Yeah.
I want to spend time with him. I want to get to know him.
Yeah, I need this.
Yeah.
Without you around judging and everything.
You just spent that whole weekend with him, so.
Yeah. So apparently that's what Kate's going to do.
Yeah.
She's going to head out to visit her brothers without her son. And of course,
and they can all piss and moan and whine about stuff.
And we'll get some big flashback at the same time of.
Probably
what happened with Kate and Mark.
I would assume.
Yeah. So I'm just now realizing as I'm going down through my notes that I completely forgot to watch Avenue 5.
Oh.
Which is absurd because it's a half hour show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Was it good?
Yeah. It's still dry.
Yeah.
This episode, we learned that the only way to keep from being irradiated in space, like, they don't have force fields.
Right.
They have shit. Human fecal matter in tubes forms a shield around the ship. They have a shit shield. And that is the most effective way to keep them from...
Okay, that is hilarious.
Not only is it hilarious, but I'm sure you can assume what happens by the end of the episode.
Yes. Well, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, shit shield.
Nice.
Yeah.
I did watch The Outsider.
So, I'll just say this. I want you to do the recap
sure.
of this, but I will say this. I've now taken to when I watch The Outsider, I walk. So, I don't put the treadmill down because I don't have a lot of room down there, as you saw.
Yeah.
But I'll walk. I can walk a good pace. It's like 10 or 12 steps back and forth across my room, and I'll walk the whole time that The Outlander is on. Because, A, it's good exercise, and B, I'd probably fucking fall asleep trying to watch this show.
Really?
Holy shit, could this thing go slower?
Yeah.
I mean, last week I complained about it being slow. This week, Jesus Christ, if I wasn't walking, I would have fallen asleep.
Well, the show opens with Holly returning to Cherokee City there to give her a report on what she's discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And the detective there, Jack, there we go. he shows up to pick her up because he's doing the favor for Ralph, trying to help out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gives her the ride too. And along the way there, like, they chat, and essentially he's like, so what are you going to tell him? I think I'll wait till everybody at once. What? I'm part of the team. Can't you catch me up? Yeah, I'm going to wait until everyone at once because I don't think they're going to believe me. And so he goes to the bathroom, and someone writes "stop her" on the wall,
mm-hmm.
possibly in blood
or shit,
Sure,
the bathroom.
Sure. So he doesn't though, and she gets in there and she lays it out to everyone, and she tells everyone her whole thing, what she thinks, the connections together, the fact that we have, you know, like, and I don't have all the fucking details. I've been swearing a lot, sorry, but basically, like, person A, whoever, for whatever reason, is the starting point for this. Murder some kids, and there's a reverberation effect, like a pebble in the water, a ripple effect of bad stuff happening to that kid's family and other people connected to this murder. Then person A runs in, well, person A, runs into person B,
mm-hmm.
infects them. We get a doppelganger. Now person B, doppelganger, murders some kids, and we get the ripple effect. B runs into C. C runs into D, et cetera. So she links it all together. She links
and proves how each one of them murdered.
Yes.
Conclusively.
Yes.
But also had conclusive evidence showing they could not have been there. They were in two places at the same time.
Exactly. And also shows where these people met each other. Shows how they crossed over. Explains it all. And honestly, she does a great job explaining it. And it's just the fact that her reasoning for this, that it's some sort of monster, beast, demon, devil, and she has a name for it. I can't.
Cuckoo.
But it's like different names for different. It's a folklore thing, on and on and on.
The boogeyman, essentially. It's Baba Yaga, it's Cuckoo, it's.
Right.
You know. Slender Man.
But she has conclusive evidence linking mm-hmm. person A to person D and all the mayhem in between. And like you said, the evidence that they did the murder, the evidence that there's no way they could have done the murder. And then explains the ripple effects of everyone around them. And the mom or the wife there, whatever.
Loses her shit.
Glory. Jumps up. And is like, are you fucking kidding me? All this fucking shit. Like, because at first, like, her lawyer's like, all right, we've heard enough. She's like, no, I want to hear this out. And yep. She finishes it. And then she just loses her mind
yep.
on Holly. And basically, nobody except Ralph's wife believes her. Believes yeah. anything yeah. she had
even
to say.
Even Ralph is like,
And Ralph has had a run-in with his dead son. Ralph's wife met the hooded figure. Ralph had evidence of, like, the messed up faces of, like, how his wife drew the person that she saw and how the other kid drew the person that he saw. And it's like, Ralph has evidence that he's refusing to believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was one guy that had been working with Ralph, and he worked for, like, the GBI, whatever they called it. And basically, he's just like, look, I understand what she's saying sounds far-fetched, but what she's saying also makes sense. And if this is what it is, then we need to consider this is what it is. And Ralph's like, yeah, I'll just go off and do some stupid fucking police work, like look for facts and clues, and storms right. off. My favorite part is when he's sitting in the car waiting for his wife.
That was awesome.
Because his wife is talking to Holly, and basically Holly's like kind of explaining stuff to her, and his wife is like, I believe you. And Jack is still there, and he gets like on his hands and says, stop her. And his neck, all the like the blistering on his neck had disappeared. And so he again doesn't stop her.
Right.
So Ralph's wife gets in the car, and Ralph goes off about, oh, you fucking bullshit, can you believe all that? And she's like, stop. And he looks in the rearview mirror, and Holly's sitting in the back seat. I invited her to stay with us. And there's a pause. She goes, I can find a hotel. He goes, no.
Wouldn't dream of it.
Yeah. Or we wouldn't want to have that or some shit. And puts it in drive and drives away.
Yep.
Well, they go home. And Holly sees the pictures on the wall that Jeannie had done. And she starts piecing this stuff together. And she's like, oh, look, he was here in the house, but it wasn't him. Because he can probably project himself on radio waves. And Ralph's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
And then she essentially makes a blacklight thing and shows evidence that someone was sitting at their table. Because the goo left behind was the same type of stuff that was found
In the barn.
In the barn with the clothes that Jason Bateman's character had been wearing when he murdered the kids, after he murdered the kid, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So Ralph is now kind of starting to believe, oh, shit, this may actually be happening.
Mm-hmm.
In the interim, Jack gets attacked by his mother, a projection of his mother, and gets the shit kicked out of him. And then the blisters on the back of his neck return, and they're worse. It's like the worst sunburn you've ever seen in your life, basically.
Right.
And essentially, he finally agrees to do what the guy has to say. And so he puts a bunch of makeup on to cover up his beat-up face, and he calls Holly. He's like, hey, I got to show you something. Oh, that's right. It was shedding like a snake sheds its skin. That's the stuff left on the table.
Right. That's what Holly was saying.
Because he's a shapeshifter. And that's why in the pictures he looked kind of like dad and then less and less like dad. Because and that's why he has to disappear for 27 days before he murders again. Because that's how long it takes him to shapeshift.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack is going to kill Holly. And she insists on taking her car because she had that negative experience on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes these cloth to help Jack to wipe the makeup off his face. He looked better without it, and drops them. When he bends over to pick them up off the floor of the car, she can see the blisters on his neck. And so now she's kind of...
And the blisters were on the neck of that guy who basically committed cop
That's what it was. Yeah, suicide by cop, yeah.
So she knows something's up.
Yeah, she knows that the blisters on the neck somehow relate to being controlled by this, you know, Baba Yaga.
Mm-hmm.
So. Baba Yaga's a way cooler name than Boogeyman.
Mm.
Sounds cooler.
It's also the name of John Wick.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah, the Baba Yaga.
Can I just say, we're now 6 out of 10 episodes into this show.
Yeah.
Never seen the monster.
No. Are you going to keep watching?
We've seen... I'm committed to this.
I know it's just one season, so fuck it.
There's 4 more episodes. It's not pressing in that deeply on my schedule.
Hey, did you watch that new one with Rosario Dawson, Briar Patch on USA?
I have not.
Neither have I. Okay.
I'll probably set it to record and then not watch it like I did with Treadstone.
Okay.
Yeah, I did watch the first episode of High Fidelity on Hulu, though.
Oh, I went to watch it, but it was rated TVMA, and I didn't want to watch it with the boy in the room. How was it?
It was TVMA.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some cussing. And
it was TVMA.
Yeah, it's the story from the movie, although told from her point of view. You know, they change a few things, but...
The main character's a woman, not a man, so that's
right.
A change.
But the episodes are only like 36 minutes, 38 minutes long, so it's weird. I watched the first one. I'll watch more. It's semi-entertaining.
Okay.
It was definitely nothing that I'm going to give a hard sell to. Not like Picard. Picard I'll give a very hard sell to.
Oh, shit. Sinner came back.
Did it?
The Sinner, yeah. February 6th. I was just looking it up.
I wonder why it didn't record for me.
I don't know. Yeah, it came back February 6th. So they've already aired 2 episodes, and the third episode's on later this week.
Huh. I'll have to see if I can get them. You know what really pisses me off? HBO has a 4-part miniseries called McMillions.
Yes.
Yeah, part one's not on demand.
What?
Yeah, part one's not on demand. Part two, part three, part four hasn't aired yet. Part one's not on demand.
Oh, I wanted to watch that. I was waiting for all 4 parts to come up.
Yeah, I don't know why part one isn't there.
Huh.
Maybe it's just a glitch, but yeah, I can't seem to find it. So
that's weird.
Yep, but I want to check that out. Yeah, I'm going to have to look into the Sinner and see why it didn't record.
It looks good. It's about like the McDonald's game, the Monopoly game at McDonald's.
And how they basically, that whole scandal about how they, security guards and such, they cheated and stole all the prizes.
Yep. It looks good.
Yeah, I really want to check it out.
I mean, I never really played the Monopoly game at all, even tried.
Mm-hmm.
The McDonald's version, that is. And then one of the things it says, like, there was no $1 million winner for, like, 6 years of it or something. Like,
yeah. Guess they kept taking it.
My wife says to me the other day, she says, hey, have you watched that new show, Lock and Key?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, yeah, of course I have. She's like, well, I watched the first episode. I want to watch the second one. I'm like, well, John and I are only watching one a week. And so we watched episode 2 together. Sorry, she had watched the first 2. Mm-hmm. And, shit, hold on. No, we watched between October Faction. I keep forgetting which episode I'm on.
October Faction, you're on 3.
Lock and Key, we're on 2. Yeah. So, yeah, so in this episode, it's
very kid-oriented show.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot more kiddish than I thought it was going to be.
I find, like, You is a very adult show.
Big time.
October Faction is adult, but, you know, kids could kind of watch it too, but, you know, it's got some horror aspects. And then Lock and Key feels very, like, kid-friendly almost.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't have any issues so far. I mean, well...
The main characters and the heroes of the story are kids.
Yeah, and we have the violent death of the dad at the beginning, and we have some pretty traumatic stuff going on there.
And they really...
Especially in this episode.
I was going to say, they really show us a lot more of that in this episode.
Yeah, but it's definitely more kid-friendly than the other, like you said, the other ones, definitely. But yeah, so we watched episode 2 together. Mm-hmm. She still likes it. She wants to check it out again. So I said, well, we can watch episode 3 next week. Mm-hmm. She was like, oh, okay. So she's down with the 1 week at a time thing, one episode a week type of thing.
For now.
For now, yeah.
We'll see if that satiates her.
Yeah.
So what you think?
Well, real quick, she has yet to watch any more Manifest, even after proclaiming how wonderful it was since we stopped watching it.
Well, maybe she didn't like the show as much as she liked the camaraderie.
Maybe. Maybe so, yeah. Yeah. That could be it. So, of course, Mom has no recollection of being trapped in the mirror, and the kids assume, well, it's because she's an adult and we're kids. So that's how they're going to sum that one up for now.
Yeah. Like I said, very kid-focused show.
Yeah. Bunch of high school hijink stuff going on.
Yeah, older brother is popular, trying to stay popular.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got the kid who twisted his ankle, so he parks on a handicap spot. There's like 5 handicap spots. Nobody's parked in any of them. He's right. Parked in 1.
Yeah.
So the kid with 2 missing lower legs keys his car.
Right.
I get him saying you're being a dick.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's no other cars parked in handicap spots.
Right. It's kind of dumb. So, yeah, Tyler wants to stay cool and popular. He's interested in a girl and lies and says he fucked this other girl. And then tries to confess to that one girl, hey, I didn't actually. She's like, yeah, I know. I'm friends with her. And you need to apologize to her, not me.
Yeah.
Kenzie, at the same time, is you know, again, she can't meet in with – she can't fit in with anyone.
Okay, part of that is because for some reason they decided to make her blonde when her natural hair color is obviously very dark. And it just doesn't look right on her. I think she would have been better served being a brunette.
That's why she doesn't have friends?
Yeah. I think people are looking at her eyebrows and they're saying, girl, no.
Well, she's having trouble meeting friends. And even Scott, the kid that from the Savini squad, mm-hmm. which is, you know, trying to help her, like be friendly, whatever. She's even kind of rebutting him. And then her own brother ditches her.
Yeah. Big shocker there.
Yeah. So she ends up going with the Savini squad kids to try for the little bunch of horror flick they're going to do them. Bodhi's afraid that Echo's going to come back.
Why is Bodhi not in school?
Because they established in the first episode he's going to a private school and his school doesn't – a different school and doesn't start for another week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so he's afraid Echo's going to come back.
Yeah, and – he kind of bonds with Rufus, the young, mentally retarded kid that is the groundskeeper.
Mm.
Yeah. And
he's just autistic.
Okay, sure. Whatever. That works too. But basically gets like some giant friggin' like bear trap, which there's no way that kid would set that by himself.
No.
My wife was freaking out when the kid was trying to open it up and to set the trap and he's on the bed. And I'm like, he's on the bed. He needs to be on the floor. It's like, yeah. It's like trying to close a suitcase on the bed.
And there's no way he would have been strong enough to open that thing.
Yeah, and he opens it all the way up with two hands.
Leans on it.
And then takes one hand off to grab the thing to lock it in place. No, it doesn't work that way.
No.
Yeah. But the coolest part of it, so we have the Savini squad, and they talk about how much they love Tom Savini and his movies and this and that. And then the kid goes to a locksmith trying to find a key that matches the mirror key.
Because remember, he found another key
yes.
for some reason in
yes.
the fucking vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, a call to him and an old vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, so he opened up the vacuum cleaner bag.
Yeah.
And there was a key in there.
Yes.
It looks like...
it's got a face on it.
Like it boy, looks like a skull.
Face. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the locksmith... So when the locksmith comes down and starts talking, I start geeking out.
Hmm.
Because I was, oh my God, that's so cool. My wife's like, well, I'm like, that's Tom Savini. She's like, who? I go, I have to pause it. I'm like, Tom Savini. Yeah, she goes, who is he? I'm like, okay, so the kids that are making the horror movie, they call themselves the Savini Squad. She goes, oh, okay, that is cool. Yeah. So Tom Savini's back too, as the shopkeeper trying to find some sort of key that matches the key the little boy Bodhi has. And a keyhole appears on the back of his neck.
Kind
of
creepy.
Yeah, super.
Yeah.
And so Bodhi's like, I'm going to try and put the key in there. But then he turns around before he can. He's got a big jar of like old keys that are useless.
Mm-hmm.
And he just gives them to him.
Yep. Seems like a thing you do to a kid. You know?
Yeah.
Just give him something to play with.
Yeah. So Bodhi puts one of the keys on the bear trap thing with the blanket over it. To,
again,
in case Echo comes back.
Putting his hand in the middle of the fucking bear trap.
And my wife's like, why is he doing that? In case Echo comes back. Why would she come back?
And hopefully she comes back before it's time to go to bed.
Yeah, or if anyone else sees it.
Yeah. Mom comes in to say, hey, let's have a heart-to-heart. I'm going to sit right here on this cushion-looking blanket. Echo, meanwhile, is having the time of her life.
Yep.
She's off living it up, going from place to place, eating like a shit ton of food in a diner, and then stepping into...
bathroom.
The bathroom, which turns out to be a fashion boutique.
Yeah.
Gets herself some new threads.
Heads to the changing room, leaving the changing room, now goes into some swank party.
I like how all these places have keyholes.
Well, the keys make keyholes.
Okay.
That's the thing. The keys make keyholes.
That was bothering me for a bit. I'm like,
but I have a problem with her using this outside the house.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, no, I guess because the key put a keyhole in the back of the guy's neck outside the house.
That's true. Yeah.
So,
and it would be kind of stupid if, like, you know, you used it to get to the ice cream store, for instance, and then couldn't get back to the house.
Right, right. So Echo does come back.
After getting herself a diamond necklace and spending some time at a dance club.
And winning a giant stuffed animal somehow.
Yep.
And comes back and, hey, Bodhi, how's it going? Oh, you found another key. I'm like, seriously? And goes over to her. You hear the snap, and she turns around, and she's fine, but the teddy bear is missing half its face.
Yep.
Oh, Bodhi, did you really think that was going to work on me? You know. And essentially, he's like, she threatens him, grabs him by the neck, because again, threatens to kill him, and basically says, you will find the rest of the keys, and I will come back here, and you will give them to me. And she leaves again.
Yeah. Because otherwise,
yeah,
it won't be pleasant.
So Bodhi decides, hey, you know what? I'm going to use this key on myself. And he puts the key in the back of his head and turns it. And when he does, all of a sudden, now you see another version of Bodhi standing there looking at that version, who's just kind of standing there comatose. And then there's a giant toy box.
Which apparently just plain old he already had.
Yeah. And he opens it up and there's like lights coming out of it and music and kind of like carnival noises and whatever. And he's like, cool. And then cut to brother and sister having a heart to heart on the stairs where the sister's like, hey, you know, you're not you anymore. You're changed.
I don't even
you're
recognize
different.
You.
You know, we used to talk all the time and I used to be able to rely on you. And now you ditch me at school and you don't act like yourself anymore. And he's like, hey, what do you expect? I'm cool. And then she's like, yeah, but hey, what's wrong with Bodhi? Because they can see in his room. And then they go in there and they see he's just got the key in the back of his neck and he's not moving. And then all of a sudden behind them, Bodhi opens the toy box and goes, hey, guys, you got to check this out. That's the end of the episode.
Yeah, there's all these lights and music coming out of.
And I had to read to see what this was. And what I found was it's a head key allowing them to enter a representation of his mind.
That would have been my guess. But
yeah. Another backstory in here. Going back when Kinsey was helping the kids make the low budget movie, the popular girl there, Jackie or whatever. Mm-hmm. The popular girl that Tyler lied and said he slept with was going to be the star, but then she didn't want to get coated in fake blood, so she walks out.
Eden.
Yeah, she's like, it's either me or the blood, and everyone's like, yeah, it's the blood, of course.
Yeah, everyone says blood.
So they all walk out. They get Kinsey to do the part, but of course, getting coated in blood and seeing the plastic and this and that reminds her of when the guy came looking for her.
Which was very dark.
Oh, yeah, because her and Bodhi are hiding, and the guy's like, come on, Kinsey, I got some questions for you. I was going to ask your dad, but obviously he can't answer them now. And we see Mom crawling up behind him. She'd been shot in the leg, and she's got a hammer, and she bashes him in the head with the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he lives because...
Well, she saw her flashback.
I'm just putting it all together.
Yeah.
Mom's story in this is that Rufus's mom and her husband were friends in high school. And basically, long and the short of it, she finds out through talking to one of the teachers and through talking to Rufus's mom and others that there was some sort of accident that happened when her husband was young, something that caused them all to drift apart.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked her brother-in-law about it. And basically, he says, like, I don't remember. And for whatever reason, I don't remember anything about that time frame.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't remember it.
But I don't. And it frustrates me that I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing a key was involved.
That's what I'm guessing as well.
But that was that episode.
Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah.
Right now, it's not terrible, but it's one of my least looked forward to type of shows, you know. I'm hoping that it picks up. Right now, though, it's kind of bothersome to me that Bodhi is such a, you know, he's the hero of this story.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of little kids being the, you know, they're resilient. I get that. But, you know, I don't like it when we put them in lead roles like this where they are the starring person and they're doing all the stuff and figuring out all the mysteries because I'm a kid and adults can't figure this stuff out. Stop that.
Manifest.
Yeah.
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 What else? What else did you watch?
Perfection.
So yeah.
This one started off with some flashbacks of Fred and Dolores' wedding slash
trial to see if they're...
Yeah. Not a court trial, but like a... they were killing vamps.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like everything here is vampire. I don't know that there are other creatures.
So far, yeah.
Although we don't know what that woman was that came up out of the water.
Right.
So, but it was kind of an odd opening as well because we see Fred at a hotel room with one of the other agents of Presidio.
Yep.
And... She's like, he says to her, you know, will I see you again? She's like, well, that's up to you. But she kisses him.
They clearly had just had sex.
Yeah.
They were getting dressed. The bed was messed up. He's cheating on his wife, which I don't understand.
Well, that's what's weird is she knew he was out. Like, because she got jumped in the bar. Well, she went to the bar looking for that guy, Rufus. And she picked a fight with somebody. With her little baton, kicked the ass of him. But then when she left, some vamps on bikes jumped her.
Yeah.
And basically they were like, hey, you killed our kin from the grocery store, you know, the other day. That was our kin. She was like, oh, we thought they were just passing through. So she goes to square off with them and she got away.
We don't see what happened other than the next cut to the next morning and brother and sister are going to have breakfast and dad's there. And they're like, hey, you're still wearing the same clothes from yesterday. And he's like, I got called out of town. I thought you were on sabbatical. Mm-hmm. Well, so they had to finish up. But now I'm officially on sabbatical. And just horse shit. And then he sees like a bloody handprint and kicks the kids out of the house and goes and finds mom patching herself up.
And, and she says, I got jumped, but I'm going to go find him and we're going to stop him. And, but, you know, he makes mention of things. You know, he'll be like, I should have been there. And she's like, no, it's not your fault. And there's a tension between them that almost leads me to believe that, like, this was an arrangement. I don't know that he's cheating on her or that they have some kind of an arrangement where it's weird. Something just didn't feel...
See, I didn't get that feeling, but I didn't pick up on that, but maybe you're right.
And maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe, you know, it really is that he's cheating, but just the way that they were so calm about it. She never asked him, like, where were you? You know,
well, but she knew he had to go deliver these things to so-and-so mm-hmm. and drop them off. And he, so she knew
he was there all night and she knew that.
Yeah.
So
maybe that's not unusual because realistically, like, I don't see him spending the night there unless he had to, or unless, you know, he knew it was late getting there, late getting back type of thing.
Right. So I'm interested to see.
Why can he bring a change of clothes?
Yeah. So I'm interested to see how that, like, if there's more to it or if he's just straight up cheating on her. Now, yeah. Why would he? She's awesome.
And the stuff that the girl that he meets up with and we're assuming slept with, when she leaves, he's like, am I going to see you again? She's like, that's up to you. She heads back to the headquarters because we find out that his dad's really alive. And these people have him. And he did something.
He gave the girl, like, samples from the sigil that was on the floor.
Right, right. But, I mean, the dad did something that got him in trouble with Presidio, and that's why he's dead.
Right, because she hands it off to the boss lady, and she's like, yeah, it looks like he did, you know, succeed. And the boss lady's like, so he's been lying to us this whole time.
Yeah. And then she's like, you know, is what about Fred? Is he going to be a problem? And she was like, no. So,
yeah. So Fred and Dolores go after these vamps, and I'm not even getting to the kids just yet, but they go after these vamps. She charms her way into the sheriff's office, to plant a USB on their server so that she can have access to the network and traffic cams.
Mm-hmm.
And, basically talks to the sheriff lady, you know, she's like, yeah, I got in trouble last night at the bar. I know, I heard, you know, you should have called me, blah, blah, blah. But we find out that the whole reason that she went to see this Rufus guy was because back in high school, she messed up, as she said, and she needed a morning after pill. And she knew that her dad would kill her, so she wanted to break into the pharmacy and convince Rufus to go with her. And he said, no, I don't want you getting in trouble. I'll do it. So he shorted out the alarm system. And when he did, the building caught fire and it burned down and he took all the blame for it, which is why his dad, the mechanic, hates her and why Rufus doesn't want to talk to her either. Because basically he wouldn't have been doing that if it wasn't for her, but she didn't force him to do it.
Well, but then she says she blames herself because she skipped town
right after that. She says the next day I left with you to go to Presidio.
So here's my question now. Whose kids are they?
Mm.
She had the morning after pill.
Right.
Were they his kid? Were they Fred's? Are they Fred's kids? But has it been more than 18 years since they left? I feel like it has been.
Yeah.
I feel like it's been. I don't feel like I don't know.
Look at how young they were when they got married.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And they look. He just looks so fucking old to me. I can't get over it.
Yeah.
And it's not like that Leslie Nielsen old where he looks the same age forever. I mean, his face looks so damn old.
Yeah.
The J.C. McKenzie there. And I'm freaking shocked that he's only 49. Hmm. He looks older.
So they figure out where the bikers are.
Yeah.
They go there to the forest. They find their bikes. They start to track them down, and they're all dead.
Yeah.
They're ripped apart. Like, ripped open, shot, destroyed. Yeah. And they find one that's almost barely alive, and they ask him, who did this? No, he dies. So something's out there.
He's got some brand on his chest.
Yes.
They made a point to show us that on the camera, so I'm sure that's important.
And then we saw, like, the last scene, we see some guy peeking out from around the corner of a tree, and he's got, like, a cyborg eye.
Yeah, but, okay, he's not watching them. He's watching the daughter.
Right.
Because the daughter's going for a walk through the same woods with earphones on. She stops because she thinks she hears something and then keeps on walking.
Which they did that cool thing where you've got a song playing and then she takes the earbuds out and it gets softer and then she puts them back in and it plays again.
I like that, yeah.
For some reason, unless it's somebody that we haven't seen yet, I feel like this is going to be the brother. You know, Fred's brother from way back.
Oh, who we think is dead?
Because, you know, we think dad's dead, but he's really not. Yeah. So meanwhile, Viv, she's having some trouble still fitting in at school, and she shows Jeff, her brother, that she drew that picture of the truck in the road before the thing happened, and he's basically like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Whatever. And so she doesn't get any help there, so her nerdy friend comes and talks to her, and she tells her, and her nerdy friend's like, oh, you're serious? She's like, well, look, don't tell anybody. Yeah. You're gonna basically sink your chances of ever being taken seriously. Everyone will hate you. Trust me, I know. And she's like, I won't tell anybody. And then turns around and tells somebody. Because that girl comes up to her and is like, oh, you know, you should stay away from Viv. She's bad news and you're going to sink your reputation. She's like, I like Viv. She's good. She's like, she's weird. Haven't you noticed her do weird stuff? And she's like, no, you're a terrible liar. You know something, don't you? Yeah. Well, she drew a picture. Like, just blabs it right out to this girl.
But don't tell anyone.
Yeah. So then the girl spreads it around the entire school.
Yeah. Of course, Viv's walking around outside and everyone's giving text messages and whispering between each other. And you hear everyone's phones going off.
Yep.
Because everyone's texting each other like, oh, she drew a picture of the bus thing before it happened. Also, this girl tells the cat's the friend, and it's the fucking bitch that no one likes is the one that's telling her this and spreading shit about Viv. But it says, like, well, the only reason why I'm even telling you this is because, you know, you didn't tell anyone what happened. So she's got some sort of mystery that Kat knows about.
And Kat says, I still think you should just come clean because everybody will be really forgiving.
Yeah.
You know, they'll understand. So something's happening there. Yeah. But then probably the coolest thing that happened this episode was Jeff's story.
Yep.
Because Jeff is like, he's got a plan for how he's going to take down Mr. Popular. And he's like, you know, I'm going to fit in, blah, blah, blah. But he says that he's going to basically start a coup. And he says, I'm going to start off with that Steven guy, the really quiet one that hangs around with him. He goes, I'm going to start there and I'm going to kind of undermine and get everybody over on my side. And then I'm going to, you know, overthrow him essentially. So he sees, you know, Popular guy walking down the hallway.
Yeah.
Steven's kind of lagging behind and he stops him and he's like, hey, I want to be your friend. And he's like, yeah, you're that guy that everybody hates. You're Jeff. Everybody hates you. Blah, blah, blah. And so Steven basically says to him, he's like, hey, tell Peter that I'll drive myself home. He's like, okay. And he's like, make sure you tell him that. He's like, all right, whatever. So he finds Peter in the gym and he's like, oh, by the way, Steven says he'll drive himself home. And Peter goes apeshit on him and practically knocks his head off. And they're all like, dude, you'll get suspended and then you can't play in the game. And
Philip,
sorry.
Yeah.
And he's just fucking livid. And it turns out that this kid was Philip the jock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it turns out that Steven was killed in a drunk driving accident. And he's dead.
Yeah.
So this is a ghost that Jeff has been talking to.
Yeah. And that been mills around and no one sees but him.
Yeah. But it was really handled well because none of us got that impression until we saw that. You know, exactly. It wasn't like we saw him fade away and go, ooh, what's going on with that? We thought he was just another character. Yeah. So I like that.
And then he talked to his boyfriend in Japan and we get this long scene where he says, we're not coming back. Which I don't understand why we got that scene at all.
Basically
character development,
probably character development. And to remind us that he did have a boyfriend. He did have a life there, but he is saying goodbye to him.
Okay.
That way we don't think what a creep.
Okay. Fair enough. Other than you and Doctor Who, I can't think of anything else.
I don't think I have anything else. Show wise. No. And we don't even have to do Doctor Who at the end because it's a week behind.
Okay. Doctor Who, then.
Can you hear me?
What?
Exactly.
Monster of the Week episode, essentially.
Yes. Yeah, and not a Praxeus type where it's preachy and telling us that, you know.
Yeah. She drops off all the companions back at home so they can go visit their friends, and they all kind of begin experiencing supernatural events.
Mm.
Graham sees an imprisoned girl,
mm-hmm.
and Ryan's friend is kind of upset that Ryan's never around and been having nightmares, and then Ryan spending the night at his buddy's house, and this guy shows up, and his fingers come off, and goes in the guy's ear and is stealing his nightmare?
Yep. Yep.
And Ryan sees him and kind of scares him away.
Mm-hmm.
Yaz. So this threw me off because Yaz is seeing It's like she shows up in, like, in her nightmare, her dream. She's in a street somewhere talking to a young girl on one side. The other side, there's a police officer just staring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that... I gather at the end that's supposed to be Yaz, but that was not Yaz playing that character, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because at first I thought it was her younger sister,
mm-mm.
but it's not.
This is it's her past.
Yeah.
It's a flashback of her past and when she was at a very low, depressed point.
So that's her nightmare.
Yep. She had run away.
Yeah.
Could have been a attempted suicide kind of thing, but, you know, they're not going to go quite that deep.
The show opens up in like, 14th century, was it Aleppo?
Mm-hmm.
Aleppo?
Yep.
I don't know where that is. Middle East somewhere. Basically, there's this young girl, and she's running back to this hospital or convent thing or whatever, and they finally let her in. She's got some strange experiences. She says, everyone's going to get in trouble here. You need to get everyone out of here. From some dreams she had, no one believes her. That night, these monsters show up and essentially take everyone.
The city in Syria.
Okay, yeah. And essentially take everyone, and the doctor is somehow signaled by them.
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes back there and picks up this girl, Tahiri. And basically everyone else gets hooked up together. You know. Oh, and Graham's nightmares is cancer's returned.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a real nightmare. So long and the short of it, they lock in on the woman that Graham keeps seeing visions of. And we find this girl imprisoned in this sphere, stuck between these two planets. And
that are basically crashing into each other.
Yeah, and the bald guy is stealing people's dreams with his fingers, is feeding the nightmares into her, and it appears to be torturing her.
Mm-hmm.
I get that? Yep. Yeah, okay, good. Because that was a little confusing.
Yep. So basically it's the Doctor of the Rescue. You know?
Yeah, Doctor to the Rescue. Mm-hmm. All the companions to Harry get captured, get locked into these things with the fingers in their ear. So their nightmares are now being fed into this woman.
Yep.
And the Doctor uses her brain to, was it Zelen is the bad guy's name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's allegedly some god.
Yes. Well, that's what he calls himself. I mean,
yeah.
Immortal.
Yeah.
Super powerful.
And so we're good.
Still in a spaceship, though.
Yeah, we're pretty deep into this episode. And the Doctor uses her intelligence and backfires everything against Zelen and sets this woman free. Mm-hmm. And then we find out that the spaceship we're on is not his, it's these people's. And we get the long backstory that basically these are two gods who like to amuse each other. They're two immortals who have godlike powers, and they like to amuse each other with petty bets and being pieces of shit, which is a common theme you see with immortal godlike people.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, what they did was they decided to take – they each had a bet who could destroy a planet first by getting everyone to turn on each other.
Right. That was the thing. Not just destroy it, but get right. the populace to destroy themselves.
Yeah, to turn on each other and destroy everything. And so when he was feeding the nightmares into her, he wasn't trying to harm her. It was what was keeping her alive. So eventually they get the two planets to turn on each other as well. And then the planets suddenly band together and they do some sort of gimmick to lock her into the sphere with a gravitational pull. These two planets are going to collide with each other to stop her. But at the same time, it killed everyone yep. on the planets. And now Zelen has spent a millennia or whatever it is trying to find someone to get her out. And he's been watching the Doctor and realized that the Doctor is, you know, smart and egotistical enough to be able to do it. And tricks the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so now and then they lock the Doctor into this thing with the finger in her ear. Yeah. Steal her nightmares.
Yep.
And then they set the thing to self-destruct, apparently. And then they decide to go to Earth, you know, England, of course, to try and feed off everyone's fears there and do it again, destroy that planet by mm-hmm. getting everyone to turn each other.
Right.
The Doctor, you know, breaks out of the little coma mind trap, gets her sonic screwdriver, releases herself.
Like, wiggles herself and then flings it out yeah. of her pocket up into her hand. And yeah.
frees herself, frees everyone else, and then goes to Earth and then quickly fools all them, fools the gods, by using their fingers against them, using the nightmare fingers against them, and traps them both in this sphere and gets them back up between the planets. And, like, the first part of this episode to her being released, the part from the beginning of the episode to the gods getting on Earth was, like, 50 minutes, let's just say. And then by minute 55, they're both trapped back in the thing again. Washed up nice and
neat. Yeah, it was very quick.
Yeah, it was really quick. Not that I didn't enjoy the episode, but... And then... Did you kind of get the feeling that, oh, when the doctor returns to Honey or whatever her name is, to Hiri, back to her, her world, did you kind of get the feeling on this, though, that these companions are all trying to decide if this is what they want to do still? Do you think, I wonder if this will be it for them after the, these next three episodes, and then next season we'll get new companions?
I don't know.
Because, like, they all really seem to judge, like, is this what we really want to do still?
Right.
Because, like, Yaz's big thing is, like, you know, I know when we come back here, it hasn't been that long since the last time we were here, but we've done so much, we've changed so much and aged so much, and they haven't.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because, like, Graham goes to his poker game, and he is a master, and he's like, well, I've had lots of time to practice. And they're like, what are you talking about?
Since last week? Yeah.
It's kind of the opposite of what it was with Amy and Rory, you know, where they'd be gone for a long time or, you know, they disappear for months and a year and he never really got them back on time.
Whereas now she tries to get them back on time, if you will. And Ryan's friend, who now knows what Ryan does because it got revealed to him, is kind of like, why don't you just tell me this what you do? He goes, would you believe me? No.
Yeah.
But Ryan actually seems like his friend's cool with it. But Graham, and especially Yaz, I got the biggest feeling from Yaz, though.
Yeah.
And maybe she's a short timer. Maybe we'll just have Graham and Ryan. I don't know. You? Why don't you tell us about you?
So this was a very you episode. Like, this harkened back to the first season.
See, now, you know how you talked about Outsider being slow and getting slower and slower? I felt like that with this one.
Even at the end?
Until the end.
Okay.
But
yes.
The whole episode leading up until then, I was just like,
Oh, yeah. So, Love has a new guy.
Rebound guy.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that they have a lot of history of being rebound guys.
Yes.
This guy was the best friend of James, her dead husband. And apparently, according to 40, back in college, he was pissed that she picked James over him.
Yep.
So he's always around. He travels the world, but he always comes to console her and basically bang her.
Oh, and let's not forget the douchebag thing he did of taking James's ashes across China and sprinkling them out a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
He probably threw him in the trash before he got on the fucking plane.
Yeah. So the guy basically looks like a Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Has the accent.
Oh, my God, he does.
Well, Joe mentions that at one point. He's like, you know, maybe it's the Avengers bod. But, yeah, he looks like a Hemsworth. He has the accent for it. Maybe he is a Hemsworth. I don't know.
That is America's butt. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so Joe first sees him, like, it looks like he's breaking into Love's place because he goes to the birdhouse, gets the key, goes in there, and Joe runs over and looks in and sees her mounting him. And he's like, oh, that's why you were pulling the curtains. So.
No, not to spare me.
Yeah. So Ellie basically says, look, fuck anybody except for Delilah, okay? Just don't fuck my sister. I don't want things to get weird. And he's like, all right. And then she tells Delilah basically the same thing. Don't screw him. She's like, I like him. I don't want him to go away or us to go away. You know, can't things just be normal? Meanwhile, everybody's basically telling Joe he needs to get on dating apps. He needs to get on Flinger. Everyone keeps saying Flinger, which is basically Tinder.
Yeah.
You know, they want him to get laid. They want him to get back out there because this guy, Milo, is around work as well. Like, he's constantly, she's feeding him food, and she's basically trotting him out there in front of Joe to be a dick. And 40 sees it. The other guy that works there sees it. Joe sees it. Everybody sees it. So Joe goes through a few of the dating apps and he finds one that's supposed to be for readers. You know, yep. If you're a big reader.
They got a dating app for everything.
Yep.
Which I didn't look to see if this is real, but I didn't doubt it.
No, I don't doubt it either.
Yeah.
So basically he has three different dates that we get to see in true, you know, rom-com fashion. You've got the girl who he's like, what do you read? And she's like, I don't really read. I just wanted to date somebody who does. And she gets drunk pretty easily. You've got what I call the aggressive fucker, because she basically is like, you know, why'd you come out here? You're trying to make yourself better. Do you have any fetishes? And then like later on, she's like, all right, I'm going to leave. You're going to walk in the door, take three steps, get down on your knees. We're going to fuck. And then you're going to leave. And then you've got the one who actually like reads and knew some good quotes, knew some good books, and then just pounded the wine and started like depressively reciting sonnets and shit. And, yeah. So none of those went well.
They never do.
No. So Joe decides he's going to stalk Milo, put his energy into that.
Right.
And he tries to chase him up into the hills through jogging, and it's all uphill. And then Gabe finds him, you know, one of Love's friends there. And he basically tells him, he's like, look, you need to work on yourself. You need to be good enough with yourself so that maybe you get back together with her. Maybe you don't. I've never seen her talk about anybody the way that she talked about you. So that's a good thing. But you know what? You're a piece of shit. So let's fix you up. So he does acupuncture on him. And
I found this actually really interesting.
Well, I was going to ask you because I know you've done acupuncture before.
Well,
did you also cry?
No, I didn't. I never had it in the ears.
Mm-hmm.
When I had acupuncture, it was she talked to me at the beginning, checked my pulse in a couple different places on me, put on the soothing music. You lay on the table. I was on my back, actually. She put the needles in me from head to toe and then said, okay, I'll be back. And she left.
That was it.
And you just lay there and experience the needles do their job in your body. You know, it does whatever it is they're going to do. And there was no talking. I didn't have any, you know, I've seen like acupuncture on Steven Seagal movies where he has like incense burning off the ends of the needles. I didn't experience that. The majority of the talking was, how you feel? Good. All right, I'll be back.
Hmm.
You know, and then... we're going to try some cupping. Okay. So I roll over on my stomach now and she puts does the cupping on my back in different spots, puts a couple more acupuncture needles in. Okay, I'll be back. So, I mean, that was my experience.
Thanks.
This was more of like a therapeutic, cause he was like holding his hands around his head, like a crown. And
he ended up having flashbacks of the day that him and his mom escaped.
Yeah.
Because she basically was like, today's the day. We're getting out of here. He's not going to touch you again. I thought he'd be better this time. He's worse. So she leaves and she says, pack something. You can bring one book. And she shows back up with some douchebag.
Yep.
And she's like, he's like, it was supposed to be just us. And she's like, well, how did you think that was going to work? Come on. This guy's going to give us a ride. We're going to be good. And he's like, no, I'm not getting in the car. She's like, get in the fucking car. And then he's crying and.
Yeah.
Feeling stuff. So basically Gabe tells him that, you know, work on yourself.
Well, hold on. Let's be clear. He's not crying and feeling stuff as a kid. He's crying. Like,
he's
outright bawling as an adult and crying and feeling stuff. Yeah.
Yep. And gives him a new mantra. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
He says you're supposed to, you know, finish things up with, I'm okay with it.
It's not a bad thing, actually.
No. Yeah. And he tells him that he wants to put him on a quick, short 7-day cleanse. Which Joe surprisingly actually agrees to.
Yep.
And tries to do to the best of his ability. So mid-cleanse, he's eating celery or drinking celery juice. And Forty's like, oh, why would you do that? Celery's awful. You shouldn't do that. And then Ellie shows up because, you know, she happened to read in the trades about Forty getting, you know, that lucrative job. And since, you know, they have a friend in common, hey, I'm a good intern. I can do this and this and this. And, you know, they have this little movie trivia contest, and he's like, all right, you're hired as an intern, which Joe kind of agrees to because he's like, it's either that or she's going to go find another Henderson, so mm-hmm. Keep her close. So then Delilah shows up at Joe's place that night, and he's still on his cleanse, and she's like, look, I did tell my story. I wrote it. Vanity Fair or Variety is going to publish it. It's not thanks to you. It's not. And he's like, oh, okay. And he just projectile vomits on her because the cleanse.
Yep.
And she says, yep, this happened to me too.
That was the funniest part. She was upset, but kind of cool.
Yeah. She's like, you puked all over my favorite shirt, but I know what happened because I did the same thing when I heard that celery was negative calories and I was going to meet some people that I hadn't seen for years. Yep. And yeah, I did the same thing. So come with me. We're getting you burger and fries.
So, they go out and they eat and they
start drinking.
Yeah.
Because she keeps putting Jameson in the drinks and then she's like, come on, let's go get some more whiskey. And they're just brown bagging it down the street.
Yeah.
Talking to each other, confessing things. And
then fucking in an alley.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, I mean,
those were against the wall. Right, just dumpster. Fucking just drilling away at her.
And they get arrested.
Police show up. Yeah. Yep.
They get arrested, and he starts panicking because he's like, if they fingerprint me or they
DNA, fuck, yeah, yeah.
Everything is shit. Yep. He even goes back to the jar of urine at Peach Salinger's house.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And she basically calls in her buddy cop, and he goes, yeah, no. You were fucking – basically, he's like, you were fucking another guy. Yep. I'm not helping you. You're on your own. So Joe calls 40.
40 gets him out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The other cop is not happy about that.
You must have some pretty important friends. They're out of here.
Yeah. He's like, I recognize you. She's like, yeah, he's my neighbor. He lives in my building. You probably saw him there.
And then?
Then shit starts going downhill. Mm-hmm. Because now we get the inevitable standoff where Forty's running his mouth at Milo, and Milo cold cocks him.
Yeah.
And Joe steps in, and he's like, you know, you leave her alone. She said to leave. And, you know, he's like, what, you going to be a tough guy? Then he just leaves, and then Love's like, I didn't need that from either one of you. I don't need you standing up for me. I don't need you defending me.
Love is bipolar fucking crazy somehow.
Yep.
Yeah.
But then 40, I can't even remember what he said, but he said something that was just funny, and it made her, like, burst out laughing and, like, kind of diffuse the situation.
Hence bipolar.
Yeah. Yeah, basically Milo had been telling, he was saying, you know, that she was dysfunctional and that she should leave 40 alone and leave him to his own devices, and you're an albatross around her neck, and that's where they got the punchy face. So, yeah, Joe does not get back together with Love at that point. He's just like, whatever. But
so Fincher, Delilah's friend, calls her.
And he says, now I remember where I know that guy from. He had those headphones. He was crossing the street to your place, middle of the night, had those headphones. He goes, he makes $12 an hour, and he lives in your building. He shouldn't have $600 headphones that he's giving away.
Right.
Especially after a star just died.
Who was promoting those headphones? He was like a spokesperson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then Delilah starts doing what Delilah does, which is investigating. And she goes over and pokes around Joe's place. Doesn't find anything at first, but then Ellie comes into their place. So she can't leave quite yet. So she keeps poking and she finds the keys to the storage unit. Thinks it'll be a good idea to go check that out.
And this is when the episode finally got interesting to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because this is when it really became you.
I actually thought, oh, shit. They're going to cut. This will be the end of the episode. Like, when she picked up the keys and we headed out, I thought the episode was going to end there. But it didn't. I was like, ooh, even better.
There's more.
Yep.
The Billy Mays. So, yeah, she goes there. And she's looking around, and she finds the cell, essentially. And she finds Henderson's laptop and some books. And she starts taking pictures of everything. Sends Fincher a message and tries calling him. And she's like, call me now. It's urgent. And then Joe comes in looking fucking psychotic. Yeah. Like, he had the full-on crazy eyes going. And he's like, I was going to ask you to dinner. I was going to see if you wanted to go out and get a bite to eat. And tells her to give up the phone. She puts it down. He picks it up. He's like, all right, I'm sorry about this. And then the next thing you know, she's waking up with a contusion on her head and a bandage over it.
Yep.
She's trapped in the cell. And he basically tells her, I just need to make some arrangements. And then you and Ellie will never see me again. She's like, Ellie can't live without me. She'll be lost if I'm not around. And he's like, don't worry. I just got to make some arrangements. You guys will never see me again. You'll both be fine. But I got to do this.
And now I'm super excited about the next episode because I really want to see where this goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're back to Joe being... I mean, dude, he looked crazy.
Yeah, he did. And then when he says, I was going to ask you to dinner, it's almost like...
Yeah, and he had, like, his eyes were bugging out of his head, and he was kind of all gangly, and...
Well, I think he felt normal for the first time, because he'd given up on his obsession with love, and now he just met a person that he wasn't obsessed with, and things were going well, but kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, I'm going to try this, because he's not obsessed with Delilah. He's not obsessed with love anymore.
Nope.
So...
I mean, he did have that thing where she said, where love, after the whole assault, said Joe, and he's like, oh, my name sounds so good in your mouth. So,
right.
But he's still not, you know, he's like, I'm okay with it.
Not like we've seen him in season one.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see what happens next.
Yep.
As that was episode 7. We only got 3 episodes left of this season.
I know. So.
Any other shows?
No other shows. You?
I'm trying to think. I watched a couple movies. Did you watch any movies?
I watched 3 of them.
All right. I watched a documentary about living off the grid in Canada.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
And they actually went province by province. And the documentary was okay, but here's what I thought was kind of cool. They introduced us to a bunch of different people first about them living off the grid and the houses they lived in. They talked about it. And then they did this neat thing where one person started talking about, like, for, let's I'll just say, like, their water source.
Okay.
And where they get their water from. And then he did a montage, kind of not montage, but it cuts to, like, every other person we've met now all talking about how they get their water.
No.
And they did the same thing. The way they formatted it was, like, now we're going to talk about, like, using the bathroom and how we compost our bathroom. Now we're going to talk about our solar electricity and what we use and how we use it. And so it was really kind of neat because it gave you the different examples, like, in a group. Well, so you could see how the different things were and everything. And
gotcha.
It talked about how solar power was so...
So he asked each group the same questions, but then cut it in instead of just saying, okay, here's how person A does everything.
Yes. We meet all these different people. He goes to their places in all these different provinces.
Mm-hmm.
And then he edits together. So when we're talking about their, how they supply their electricity, it's all of them talking about it, which was kind of neat. One of the things that came up in it is something that Kate and I have talked about a lot, which is like how much, you know, it just seems so expensive to go to solar electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, this guy really talked about it. And the guy says, well, geez, you know, I mean, you don't pay for electricity, so that's nice, right? You get free electricity. And he's like, no. I prepaid for 30 years for electricity when I set the solar system, solar panels up. You know, like I prepaid for 30 years of electricity. So then it's almost like, well, shit, are you better off just paying monthly then? Or what's better? I guess in the end, if you don't rely on electricity anymore, if power goes out, you still have power. But
which is a big thing.
What I thought was interesting was they talked to this one guy and he's like, well, that top satellite up there, this guy lives way out in the boonies off the grid. He makes his own power, da da da. Well, that top satellite there is for my TV. And that bottom satellite there is... satellite internet. And the documentary and the host guy was like, you know, it's kind of funny. He's like, of everyone we talk to, there's just a couple of people that don't have internet. And the guy goes, well, that's the first thing I set up when we got out here. And he goes, but there's only a handful of people that actually have TV.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone has internet.
Well, yeah, because with the internet, you can watch TV.
But everyone's living off the grid,
mm-hmm.
but they have internet. I just find it hilarious, you know, because it seems kind of the opposite of any other off-the-grid things I've watched. But those are typically like I'm living out in the middle of nowhere because I want to live in this one-man cabin by myself and live off the land and da-da-da, so I've left everything behind.
Right.
These are people that are just being self-sustaining, but, yeah, they want the internet, you know. So I just thought that was interesting. I can't remember the name of it. It was on Amazon, though. What did you watch for a movie?
One of them that I watched was Netflix's sequel to All the Boys I Love, P.S. I Still Love You.
Yes, I saw that. How's that?
It's good.
Yeah.
The first one was all about her, you know, kind of falling for these guys.
Yep.
And in this one, it's her sister had sent out letters. You know, all the letters that she had written, her sister sent them out in the first movie.
Oh, okay.
And that's how these boys found out stuff. Well, one of them, John Ambrose.
Yep.
Never got his letter.
Oh.
Except he did. Because in this one, it opens up with her having a boyfriend now. So it picks up right where the first movie ended. So now she has a boyfriend. She's going out on her first date ever. And John Ambrose contacts her back and he's like, hey, I got your letter. So it's her dealing with, you know, she's never been in a relationship. She's with somebody who has been in a relationship. He's been in a few relationships.
Yep.
So he's had all of his firsts. He's done all this stuff. He's kind of a pro at a lot of this stuff. Versus this John Ambrose guy who is very down to earth and hasn't really had a relationship. But, so it's interesting watching because they deal with, you know, first fights, first, you know, the issues that you run into in a relationship early on. Yep. And how it can look appealing to run to somebody else. And it was good. It was decent.
Nice.
What else did you watch?
Well, we watched a classic movie, actually. The kids never watched it. Kate's one that said, hey, we should watch this. We watched on Disney Plus Flight of the Navigator.
Hmm.
Have you ever seen that?
I have.
Okay. From 1996.
Several times.
So we're what? Watching it. 1986.
Oh, thank
sorry,
you.
Sorry.
I was like, no.
I said 96. No, 1986. So I'm watching it, and I haven't watched it since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, the voice of Max, which is the spaceship, I recognized, and I looked it up, and it's Paul Rubens.
Nice.
Pee Wee Herman. And then later on, when Max takes the maps out of the kid's brain,
mm-hmm.
you know, with his little scanner thing, he also picks up some of the kid's personality. And now it's basically Pee Wee Herman, because he's like, ah! Like making the noises and the laugh and on and on and on. And it's like, okay, now this makes sense. Because prior to that, it was like Paul Rubens, but it was like a computerized voice with a little echo to it. Yeah, good movie. We watched it with the kids, and the kids liked it.
I watched that so many times as a kid.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
You should watch it again to see if it still stands up.
Yeah.
For Kate, it was like, oh, this makes more sense to me now as an adult than it did as a kid. And then
the jokes or the story itself?
The story itself. And then for me, it was like, oh, yeah, I actually appreciate it better now. And it actually, I mean, considering it came out in 1986, still holds up. If you appreciate the fact you're watching a movie from 1986.
Not 96.
Right. what'd you watch for a movie?
Well, I did my Valentine's duty.
Yes.
As I said. And I did back-to-back. I did Fantasy Island first.
Yes.
The Blumhouse one. It was good.
Yeah?
Yep. It was not a bad movie. It was a bit predictable. There were some very heavy-handed exposition things.
I believe it.
It was fun seeing all the actors and actresses up there. They had some nods. One particular one that I actually went, right at the very end of the movie. But it was an interesting take on the legend of Fantasy Island, if you will. You know, a much darker take. But
I definitely plan on watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give it a sell. You know, it was enjoyable.
Before you get to your next flick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to the movies myself with Kanan.
Okay.
We've caught 1917.
Oh, okay.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He liked it a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
you can tell, I mean, it was not filmed in one continuous shot the whole movie.
Right.
But you can tell that they did some long-ass fucking takes.
Mm-hmm.
And except for two parts, it does look like it was one continuous shot. And the two parts makes perfect sense as to why, this definitely wasn't. But it was just, you never got switched camera angles. It was one camera angle that moved with the action the whole time.
Oh, that's cool.
It was really cool. The story was great.
Mm-hmm.
The action was great. The violence was violent at times. I mean, for a World War I movie, which I don't think we get enough of those anymore, I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
I thought it was fantastic. Kanan wants to buy it.
Cool.
Yeah. So.
That's awesome.
So your Valentine's double feature.
Yep. I had to basically run out of Fantasy Island.
Yep.
Fortunately, there was no PS. So
yep.
I got to just run out of there, throw my soda cup away. I had originally said, you know, oh, I'll get the large soda so that I can refill it. Didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was way too much.
That's a lot of fucking soda.
Yeah. Peed, thankfully, and ran in before the previews had even started. My second movie was supposed to start at 9:10, and it was 9:15 before the preview started. So that was weird.
Same thing happened on 1917. It was supposed to start at 12:40,
mm-hmm.
and it started at or 12:45, and it didn't start till like 12:50.
Yeah,
that's weird. It was 5 minutes late for the previews to start. Yeah.
So my second movie was Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yes,
and originally I was like, I should watch that one first because I think Fantasy Island's going to be better, you know, but it wouldn't have worked out that way for the times. Like, this way was the best way to do it. So I ended on Sonic the Hedgehog. I ended on the right one.
Oh, really?
Holy God, that was a good movie.
I've heard a lot of positive about it, actually.
You know, I was shocked. I will tell you this. The biggest thing is that they made that change to the way that he looked. You know, they went back and changed it.
Yeah.
And you could tell that some of the in some of the camera shots, you can tell that they originally filmed it with the taller, stupid-looking version.
Yeah.
Like, there's one scene in particular where two people are sitting there and they have their arms around each other and he's sitting in between them. And, like, as it stands now, he's way below their arms.
Yeah.
You know, so you could tell that he was supposed to be up there as, like, the group photo kind of thing. But if they hadn't changed it, it would have been terrible. But seeing that version on the screen that was basically the video game version made all the difference. And this movie was fun as shit.
Does he collect rings?
He has rings. He's given the rings right in the very beginning. He has a pouch of them, and they allow transport to other worlds.
Okay.
But every time he drops the pouch or drops the rings, it makes the noise from the game.
Nice.
There were so many nods. Like, he is on Earth in a place called Green Hills, which is the first zone of the first game. Mm-hmm. And in the original Japanese version, it wasn't Robotnik, it was Eggman.
Yes.
And the Americanized version is Dr. Robotnik. Well, about halfway through the movie, as Dr. Robotnik has been sending his drones out and they all look kind of oval, Sonic starts calling him Eggman to insult him.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was great. I give a hard sell to this movie.
Oh, nice.
This was so much fun. It's good for kids. It's good for adults. The acting was great. The story was fun. Jim Carrey was the most Jim Carrey I've seen him in forever.
Oh, yeah.
Holy God, he was fun. Ben Schwartz as Sonic was phenomenal. Even James Marsden was good. But yeah, honestly, like, watch this movie. They left it wide open for a part two.
Nice.
In the most perfect way possible. So basically, stick around. It's not a full PS. It's at the end of the movie when the credits start. You get to watch a 16-bit version of the movie. Like, they do key scenes from the movie, but not in 16-bit style. And then after that first part runs, they do the PS scene right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely worth it.
Nice.
Yeah, I strongly suggest this movie. If you like video games, if you want a family movie, if you just want to laugh and have fun, this was fucking great.
I watched Parasite.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was not anything at all like I thought it was going to be.
Right?
With a movie like Parasite, and it's a Korean movie or an Asian movie, you think horror movie, some sort of infection, something like that. No. The parasite is this family acting as a parasite infiltrating this rich family.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't want to give it away too much, but we'll talk about it more when we're done, I guess. But I thought it was good. The story was good. I was fucking surprised at the ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see what I was saying, again, not to get too into it, but you see what I was saying last week where making an American version – it's going to be weird because
there's a lot they're not going to be able to do.
Or that they won't be able to, like, it won't translate well. Like, look at The Neighborhood. Like,
yeah.
Where do we have neighborhoods like that? And everybody had security systems.
Yeah.
Their original neighborhood where they were basically living down in the basement.
Yeah. Yeah.
The people pissing on the sidewalks. Like, there was a lot of very culturally specific stuff that I think is going to be hard to replicate in an American version.
Showing how the family was a parasite.
Mm.
And then the stuff with the ex... Well, the stuff with the maid.
Mm.
It's just...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it hasn't been out here in the States enough for I feel comfortable talking about
right.
it without ruining it for everybody.
Well, especially it's coming back to theaters, so...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everyone's going to get a
chance. Well, because it won the Oscar, now it's going to get that wide release so people can see it.
Yep. You can buy it right now on Amazon. You can rent or buy it on Amazon,
so... But I would give it... It's a dark comedy, but it's I don't see the, not a lot of comedy. Mm-mm. A lot of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Some a lot of drama.
Mm-hmm.
But
not really like
no. There's also deep
drama.
But... No. There's also a lot to do with I can't think of the wording I want to use, but like what's your station or level
social
in life?
Class.
Social class. Thank you. A lot of social class stuff going on.
A lot. That's like one of the main points.
Yeah.
Like they're parasites, but are they doing it just to survive kind of thing?
Which that's what a parasite does. It affects you to survive.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was, it wasn't a parasite like you think of a parasite. That's for sure.
Mm-mm.
But I would give it a, I would say check it out.
Mm.
You got to be patient with it. You know, subtitles as well, which some people have a problem with. I don't.
You don't I didn't either. Even notice them.
Yeah. But yeah, it was good.
Good. I'm glad you saw it.
Yeah. News or trailers?
Yes. Not a lot of news. Quite a few trailers.
All right. I don't have any news.
Okay.
Not really.
Birds of Prey, they changed the title.
Did they?
Because it tanked so bad at the box office. So they changed the title to Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey because they thought maybe people were confused and weren't finding it.
Well, my wife said to me, hey, isn't that movie about roller derby, Birds of Prey? And I go, no, why? It's like, oh, well, like all the people in my roller derby, like in our group, Facebook group are sharing images of it. And it's this, that girl's on roller skates and this and that. And I got the impression it was about roller derby. Nope, not at all.
Nope.
She's like, oh, okay. Why do you think it tanks so bad?
I don't know. They're saying name recognition. I think that people... I think it was a bad time of year for it. I don't know. It got good reviews. Like, people thought that it was genuinely fun and funny, and maybe people weren't ready for a Harley Quinn movie.
I wonder why, but... Yeah.
It was like the worst opening for a DC movie.
Yeah.
Could also be just toxic fanboys.
Yeah, but why didn't people go see it? People would still go see it.
Mm, I don't know.
You know, I mean, I didn't realize it did that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
conversely, Sonic was the highest rated or the highest opening weekend for a video game based movie.
Hmm.
Did like 68 million.
Yeah. Damn. I mean, it doesn't have a lot of competition, let's be honest. They ever made a Legend of Zelda movie.
Which they won't.
I wonder why, though. That I mean, quite frankly, I hadn't heard a lot of negative about it. I just didn't have any interest in going to see it.
I wanted to go see it, and I probably still will at some point. But
oh, you have your thing. Yeah.
Well, that was nice that night. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It cost me 50 cents per. And then you have to do a 50 cent if you order it online.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So this is interesting. Disney Plus is going to make a Mighty Ducks TV series.
Oh, really?
Well, here's the twist. The Mighty Ducks are the villains.
What?
Yep. Because you remember the whole premise of the Mighty Ducks was that they were the scrappy ragtag.
Bad news bears on ice.
Yep. Well, they got so popular that they became the elitist assholes that they fought against.
Oh, my God. They're the Yankees.
Yeah. So now this kid, who Lauren Graham is his mom, tries out. And they're like, you're not good enough, loser. So him and Lauren Graham decide to make a new scrappy group of ragtag kids that got rejected by the Mighty Ducks to take him down.
Actually kind of makes sense.
It's the most sense of anything that I've heard.
It actually kind
of
works.
That's all I got for news.
Okay.
We got a few trailers.
All right, go.
Well, I sent you The Iron Mask.
Yes. Jackie Chan, Arnold Schwarzenegger. This movie is green screen central.
Yeah.
I'll watch the hell out of it,
though.
It's
two different movies. Because all the scenes with Jackie Chan and Arnold Schwarzenegger looks like a comical take on The Man in the Iron Mask.
Yep, it does.
Just that particular part where he's locked in the tower.
Yep.
And then outside of that, it looks like fucking Mulan.
It looks like a wushu-y, yeah.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden. Yeah. It was really, I don't know which one it wanted to be.
Yeah.
You sent me a trailer.
Well, so that's the Americanized title of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it came out in China in August.
Okay.
and it's actually called like VIY 2.
What?
Yeah. I'd actually heard about this before. It's a Russian Chinese fantasy adventure film.
Okay.
And it was actually called VIY or V2 Journey to China.
Okay.
And it does have Jackie Chan and Arnold Schwarzenegger in it, and it's set in the 18th century. And the film follows the continuing exploits of this Jonathan Green, this cartographer, mm-hmm. as he undertakes a scientific and supernatural journey that leads him from England to China.
What?
Yeah, it's
That's
weird.
That's not what I got in the preview.
Not at all me either, drawing. But this is the same movie. Rucker Hauer's even in this movie.
What?
Yeah.
No, because this was a girl who was supposed to escape and go...
Yeah.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
This is it. Yeah. The film is being released in the United States, United Kingdom, under the title The Iron Mask.
That doesn't make sense.
Yep. But yeah, this is actually a sequel to another movie that came out in 2014 that starred a bunch of people you never heard of and a bunch of Russians. And, of course, I don't think we've ever got that released over here. And, yeah.
Interesting.
I'm interested to see this because I'm kind of curious now if this is – because the movie is in Russian and in English.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if we're going to get, like, the Godzilla effect. When the original Godzilla came out over in Japan
mm-hmm. –
and we got, and then 2 years later, came over to the United States, but they added all those scenes with Perry Mason.
Oh, yeah.
And Americanized it. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting, I guess. But anyhow, yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger is playing James Hook.
As in Captain James Hook?
James Hook. Jackie Chan is playing Master.
Huh.
Oh, well, we'll be interested to see.
Huh. So, you sent me a trailer.
I sent you a trailer called I Am Not Okay With This. And the trailer is very vague.
Yeah, did nothing for me.
But it comes out on Netflix February 26, 2020. It's an upcoming coming-of-age comedy television series based on a graphic novel.
It's a superhero story.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw another trailer today, and they were like, oh, this is the upcoming superhero story. And it was the same kind of thing. It was like 5 seconds long and made no sense.
Yeah. It's supposed to be, what did it say? It's from the producers of, shit, who's it from?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but it was like Stranger Things and something else, I think. Anyways, it comes out February 26th, and it just looked really vague, but I'll check it out anyways.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then you sent me another one.
I did.
The Hunt.
When did I send you that one? Oh, it was one we had seen already. That's why. I thought right. We talked about it on here. But it got pushed back, didn't it? Because of the political shit in it?
Because of the political shit in it.
Yeah. Now, this trailer made it look completely different, didn't
and
it?
And completely awesome.
Yeah.
Like I said, I wanted to see it before. Now I really want to see it.
Yeah. So I wonder...
And their new tagline is, the most talked about movie of the year is one nobody's seen yet.
Yes. I wonder if they cut all that political shit out of it.
I don't believe that they did because I read a quick... not a synopsis, but a quick interview, and they were like, you know what? People went into this thinking that they knew what they were talking about, and they don't. If they actually watch the movie, they'll see that it's not what they thought that it was, and it's fine.
Yeah, it was supposed to come out in September, and now it's coming out this March.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I will be seeing that one.
Yeah, I do want to check this one out.
Saw the trailer for Stranger Things 4.
Yes, you sent me that one.
Mm.
The fucking image you sent me has the sheriff right there in it. So it's like, I guess he's alive.
Yeah. Yep. Hop is alive. Or it could be a clone or a doppelganger
or
something.
You watch the trailer and they're in Russia.
Yep.
And he's on like a chain gang.
Yep.
And they basically play ominous Russian music and show guys building train tracks.
Yep.
And then boom, there's Hop. That's it.
Yep. I saw two trailers that I hadn't seen before when I was watching Sonic. So they were more family-oriented, but I wrote them down because one of them at least looks really cool. It's called My Spy.
Okay.
Dave Bautista is a CIA agent.
Okay.
little 9-year-old girl finds him in his, you know, hidey hole stakeout place where he's trying to look for the bad guys, and video records him and basically says, I want you to teach me how to take care of myself and be a spy, or I'm going to upload this video and, you know, you're going to lose your cover and be screwed. So it's one of those type of movies, you know, him trying to fit in.
Well, she's kind of a dick.
Yeah. But his partner there that he's working with is Kristen Schaal.
Okay.
You know, and she's like, I will upload this to the internet and make everybody see it. And he's like, could she do that? Oh, yeah, kids can do everything. but it looks really good. It looks funny. Yep. I'll check it out at some point. And the last one was called Rumble, and I thought of you for this one. It's an animated movie, but it's monster wrestling.
Really?
Like giant kaiju monsters.
Oh,
doing wrestling.
Dude, there's an actual league that's called Kaiju Big Battle, people dress up in kaiju costumes and wrestle in a ring. It's hilarious.
Well, this one...
They run like 4 shows a year.
Tentacular. He looks like a giant shark, but his arms are like, they split off into tentacles.
Yeah.
And he is the reigning champ, and nobody can beat him. So now they're trying to train a monster to beat him. And it looks funny. Ben Schwartz is going to be a voice. Will Arnett, Terry Crews, Tony Danza... And then some of these people I think you might know, but I don't know. Like Joe Anoa'i.
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah.
Roman Reigns.
Joe Anoa'i.
Becky Lynch.
Yep.
Stephen Smith. That's the little.
Yep.
Michael Buffer.
Nice.
So, you know, we're going to get some Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
Yep.
So, yeah, I thought you may, but I don't think it comes out till next year.
January 29th, 2021, WWE Studios is involved.
Ah.
That's cool. I didn't know. I'll check that out.
Yeah. Wesley might like that.
Yeah?
The only other thing that I had, I wanted to share this with you. I took a screenshot of this because Mark Hamill posted this to his Instagram. The Masters of the Universe Revelations anime series. Have you seen the voice cast?
No.
So he posted the voice cast.
Okay.
Because this is Kevin Smith is doing this. Mark Hamill as Skeletor.
Joker, yeah.
Lena Headey as Evil Inn.
Okay.
Chris Wood as Prince Adam / He-Man.
Damn.
Sarah Michelle Gellar as Teela. Liam Cunningham as Man-at-Arms. Stephen Root as Cringer. Exactly. Diedrich Bader as King Randor / Trapjaw.
Okay.
Griffin Newman as Orko. Tiffany Smith as Andra, Henry Rollins as Triclops.
That's funny.
Alan Oppenheimer as Mossman, Susan Eisenberg as Sorceress, Alicia Silverstone as Queen Marlena, Justin Long as Roboto, Jason Mewes as Stinkor, Phil LaMarr as He-Ro, Tony Todd as Scareglow, Cree Summer as Priestess, Kevin Michael Richardson as Beastman, Kevin Conroy as Merman.
Nice.
And Harley Quinn Smith as Elena.
Well, she's going to be in it.
Yep. I think it's a solid voice cast.
I do, too. I just, the anime, fuck it, I'm going to watch it.
Yep. It's not Thundercats Go, that fucking chibi animated.
That was terrible.
It's not that. So I will definitely check this out. Okay. That's all I got.
Me, too. I don't got anything else, either.
Good.
Cool. Well, that's the episode, then.
All right.
Hope you enjoyed our 200th episode.
Yeah.
It's still kind of crazy.
200.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K. Nobody ever finds us there, but we're there.
Yeah. That's the show.
Later.